There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
It is said that deep in the hearts of the truly wicked lives the soul of a cat. And when that soul is troubled, angered, or jealous, it will leap out, claws and fangs bared to take down the source of its distress. Okay, I don't know who says that, but I'm sure someone does. They sure do on Max Mike Movies. We say it all the time. And why? Because this week's entry in our series, 'Cause It's Good For You, is the 1942 horror film Cat People. Cat people aren't much fun. They don't come when you call. They won't chase any ball.
Cat people aren't much.
Anyway. We're looking at films in the Criterion Collection, and this sure is one of them. What's also one of them is our host, playing with his catnip mouse, Max Mouser Levine. Give us a meow, Max. Hiss, hiss, spit, spit. Next to him, knocking things off other things, is just me, Mike. You gonna finish that? Loose. We'll be getting right to this week's movie right after we get to you.
Poll question.
Last week, Max asked who your favorite Pixar protagonist is. You did. This be what you gots to say. Vince Snowy, the Ice Master from our friendly neighbor to the north, Canada, wrote us, quote, Dory from Finding Nemo always makes me laugh, and I also love Doug the dog from Up. Because he is a dog, a good dog, and I love dogs, end quote.
And he loves you.
He does. You know, Dory speaks well, you know. Hello.
Oh, man, I wish I spoke well.
Thanks, Vince. Next, Bill O'Lading, Max.
Bill O'Lading.
Our pal from somewhere else sent us via email, quote, Coco 2017 features Miguel, a 12-year-old Mexican boy, aspiring musician, who is transported to the world of the dead during Dia de Muertos and needs to find his way home. During the journey, Miguel learns that heroes are not always what they seem, and also the importance of family love, both giving and receiving. He is written realistically for a teen boy, impulsive, excitable, and with sky-high dreams of stardom. But he's also good-hearted, clever, and has the passion and skill for music. I love the film. It's visually rich and infused with Mexican culture. It's got the big stuff like skeletons and alebrijes on Dia de Muertos and Frida Kahlo being crazy, but also little stuff. Miguel's brother has a Mexican national team soccer jersey on. The skeleton bureaucrat has a conca on his desk, and there are a million dead Mexican celebrities in the background of every scene. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I missed that.
There's Mexican cynicism and Mexican overt joy combined, just like in real life. There's not a Mexican I've spoken to who didn't weep openly during Remember Me. It's now a national inside joke. And then he says something in Spanish I can't pronounce, but it translates to, it's called The Crying Movie. Everyone knows what that means. Miguel is written as unselfish, capable, and carries a maturity in him that really endears. He's probably the most decent and realistic of Pixar's protagonists, albeit it's hard not to be cartoonish about a protagonist toy cowboy, car, or whatever. Miguel is especially good paired with his deceased great-great-grandfather, Hector. I know I sound as though I've had too much tequila, but Coco is Pixar's best, in my view, without caveat. Trivia. Miguel's character was specifically designed so even the poorest of Mexican children could dress up like him for Dia de Muertos. All you need is skull makeup and a red hoodie, and many, many do, end quote.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't it? And since I happen to know that old Bill spent more than a little time in Mexico, it's good to know that information. So, thanks, Bill.
Thanks, fine laddie you are.
I love that film. Rolling over to Facebook, we have Regan McStravick up next with, quote, The lamp. Definitely the lamp. You go, little lamp, end quote.
Luxo?
I think he means Luxo Jr., yes. Thanks, Regan. Charles Forsyth sent, quote, Carl Fredrickson. Up isn't even my favorite Pixar movie. That would be Monsters, Inc.? But Carl Fredrickson is a great character, end quote. Carl is great, and I'll take Ed Asner in just about anything. Thanks, Charles. Nick Hoffman offered, quote, I know it's obvious for me, but Remy, followed by or possibly tied with Wall-E, end quote. Ah, Remy, who cooks better than Patton Oswalt? Thanks, Nick.
The man can cook.
He's got a good way with a joke. Great way with a story, too. Yeah, man. Mm. I love his shaggy dogs. Mm. Harry McCracken said, quote, the snowman in Knick Knack at SIGGRAPH, which is a computer company or sort of convention. I don't know if they do them anymore. But at SIGGRAPH in Boston in 1989, I rode down an elevator behind Steve Jobs and maybe Loreen, which I think was his wife. We all walked into the exhibit hall and went to the Pixar booth where they were playing Knick Knack, and a huge crowd was laughing its head off. Steve was in the back beaming, and I may have been the only person who noticed, end quote. Ooh, that's an early one and a great story.
That's cool.
Harry. Yeah. Byron Ho wrote, quote, the pit bull in Kitbull. My heart hurts for how he's treated, but it shows how, despite his mistreatment, he still has a kind heart, end quote. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's from one of their shorts. Thanks, Byron.
Yeah, that's an obscure one.
Yeah, I think that one looked like it was going to be so depressing I couldn't watch it, because I think they keep him outside and it's all rainy and unhappy and stuff.
Yeah, I think
and there
that's
might
right.
be. I don't. Is there pit fighting? It's a Pixar cartoon. I hope there isn't, but I have this bad feeling there is.
I don't think I watched it either. I think it looked like I was like, nope, this is going to hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Ursula Murray Husted posted, quote, Luca, it breaks my heart that this one isn't more widely lauded as a masterpiece, end quote. It's a lovely little film, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks, it is. Ursula. And he lives on the second floor, you know?
I think I've heard him before, or seen him before, or whatever. Anyway, but last but not least, sending her weekly vocal missive is Max's Reason for Sweating, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Talk to me, talk slow.
Hello, Max, my movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question. Well, this is an easy one, actually. There's only one kind of one answer, right? And that's Miguel from Coco. And what a wonderful movie. What a wonderful kid. He's so talented. He's so sweet. He's so brave. I love everything about him almost as much as I love Max. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful week. And I look forward to hearing next week's episode. Hope you have a great time. Bye.
She says Coco, but I think she means Miguel.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she really likes the great-grandmother.
Could be, although she, I think she has one
I don't
line.
Think she has any lines.
Papa? Papa? Yeah, she at the end
oh,
she
yes,
does.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I think she says Papa twice. That may be it. But cool. How about you, Max? Who's your favorite Pixar protagonist?
Oh, boy. Well, I get why so many people vote for Miguel. Mm. I like Mr. Incredible. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, heroic, but he's flawed. He's limited, but he also changes. He has a real character arc.
We can't have that.
And, and I think it's very believable. The guy who wants to recapture his glory days and beginning to realize that he can't, but he has a different kind of glory he can achieve. I really like him. I think the voice for Craig T. Nelson is perfect. I mean, I also think Holly Hunter is amazing in that movie. Yeah.
And her tears.
And her tears. Yes.
A fountain of Holly Hunter's tears. Yeah.
What about you? Who's your favorite Pixar main person?
I mean, I do love Miguel. I actually really like Merida, even though I don't like the film she's in as much. I think Merida is a lot of fun, and I love her fiery nature, and I love her, and I actually love her three little brothers too. But I'm actually going to choose the mom from The Incredibles because she goes through so much and manages to hold everything together, and she actually finally gives Mr. Incredible a way for him to get over his issues and not have to be so much apart from everything. It's like, we can go through this together. So I think she's absolutely, well, incredible, really. But
cool.
Thanks tons for those answers. We love them and they love you. So much so that we'd really like to know, what horror movie gave you nightmares after seeing it? Which horror movie monster just kept with you, peeking out from the shadows of your darkest thoughts? Let us know and we'll bring back Very Bumpy scary. Puck cereal. It's round what? And brown and never makes a sound, though you
know.
Now
that's what gives me nightmares.
But next, we'd like to know, seen anything good? So Max, seen anything good this week?
I did.
Oh, what did you see?
I saw the latest Spooderman. Oh, wait, no, that was MODOK's knockoff. I saw Spider-Man Brand New Day.
And what did you think of it?
I really liked it. I mean, it's amazing. All of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies have worked for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. I think it's touching. I thought that would they do throw in a rather large number of other characters from, you know, other, the MCU.
Oh, but at least they only pick the top tier ones that everybody knows. Like
that's what I like, the Punisher.
Or like, what, yeah. Not Mausoleum. What the heck is his name? I want the teeth.
Tombstone.
Tombstone, yeah.
Yeah, Tombstone. Ramrod.
Yeah. Ooh, don't say Ramrod. That's no.
Yeah.
Ramsey and Rod, yeah.
Yeah, but they actually picked people. I don't mean the villains, but they picked people who fit the story. And it was also nicely kind of reminiscent of the old 60s and 70s Marvel comics where everybody showed up in everybody else's comic book, but usually just, hey, look, there's Thor. And that's it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I think Tom Hall, I like the fact that they're not trying to pretend the characters are children anymore.
I know, though Tom Holland is like 30 and he's still playing like a 22-year-old, but okay, it's closer.
Well, he's got the face for it.
He's had his hand in the hormone jar. He's huge.
he has bulked up.
Yeah, which is surprising. And I also like the chemistry between him and MJ, but of course it's much easier when you're married to her.
Yeah. I thought Sadie Sink was terrific. I'm not going to say who she is in it because that's kind of a surprise. Mm. But I thought she was great.
Cool. Yeah, I liked it too. I liked it very much. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. But yeah.
What about you? Did you see anything good?
Oh, I did. I saw two things this week. One of them I saw last night, and I'll do that one first because it's the lesser of the two. I happen to be on YouTube, and Hammer Films has its own YouTube channel, and they've been releasing some, and some of them in like 4K. Now, I've never watched the Hammer horror films. I know there's 3 billion of them. Yeah. But this was an older science fiction film I'd never heard of called Four-Sided Triangle. And it was a story about basically cloning. And I was like, in 1954? Really? Okay. And it is a typical tale of these two guys who make a machine that can take thing A and turn it into thing B that's exactly the same as thing A.
Ah, a Xerox machine.
I mean, except it's a watch. The first thing to do is a watch. The problem, of course, that besides those two, there's also a woman involved, and she is in love with one of them, and the other one is in love with her, so we have a problem. But of course, the machine doesn't work right on living matter until they make it work on living matter. And thankfully, the guy who doesn't marry the woman, but would like to be with her, asks her and tells her, look, I'm really in love with you. What would you think about making another one of you so I could have one too? Weirdly, she agrees.
Really?
She does. And it doesn't go as far into the issues of, you know, what is human, what isn't human that I would like it to do. And it does fall on the, and they tampered in God's domain ending. But it was still actually kind of interesting, especially for a Hammer film. Because as you know, British science fiction films are, what's a nice way to put this? Slow. They're really slow. So, But the big film I saw this week was Coyote versus Acme.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
I will, on the negative side, I will say it is not great. But you know what? It made me laugh.
That's what matters.
Throughout the film, they were doing some of the stuff. They were even showing clips from old Coyote cartoons. And I'd seen them thousands of times, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm still laughing. And there's some new gags. And they made me laugh. John Cena. He took the whole thing seriously, and he plays a bad guy, and he doesn't care that he's in a movie with the Coyote, the Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny, and Fog. Actually, Foghorn Leghorn is his boss, and at one point he's like kind of afraid of him because he doesn't want to get fired. But I liked it. It's not great, but it's nice and it's fun, and it made me laugh. And it's the quality of the animation, the mix is very, very good. So yeah. If it's still out there when you want to go out in the theater and see it, Coyote versus Acme.
Yeah, definitely.
And then that's
good to know.
Awesome beans. But now we should get back to this week's movie, Cat People. And
the facts.
Budget, $135,000. Dollars. Take.
Okay.
Well, that's apparently disputed because records weren't kept so neatly as they are today. Yeah. But it's guessed on the low end, it's guessed that it pulled in over $1 million, which for a low budget.
$1 million.
Yeah. Well, someone said it was, could be as high as four. But for a low budget horror movie that came out during World War II, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Man, that's like 10 times, almost 10 times its budget.
I know. Speaking of that take, it seems that this movie spent longer than usual time in theaters, allowing reviewers to not only write about it once, but in some cases, numerous times. Like, wow. Hey, you know that film I didn't like? You know, I kind of like it now. You should go see it. Either way, this film not only spawned, littered, a sequel, The Curse of the Cat People, which was Robert Wise's first feature film a year later in 1944.
Robert Wise,
West Side Story, Wrath of Khan.
Did he do anything anyone's heard of?
Andromeda Strain. Yeah.
Nope.
It would also be remade in 1982 starring Nastassia Kinski and her snake and Malcolm McDowell. In an age of both less is more and the Hays Code, RKO was worried that this movie was too subtle and wouldn't grab the Universal monster crowd.
Mm.
If you wondered why some of the sets, especially the apartment building that Yelena lives in, are so lavish, it's because they're reused from the Magnificent Ambersons.
So that's the big Amberson mansion. Got it.
The big staircase. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm like, wow. That's a brownstone in New York?
How the hell can afford this? Is she like the queen of Serbia?
And she's like, oh, I just have this little suite of rooms. Okay, sure you do. And what do? Oh, you draw things at the zoo. Well, that makes a lot of sense. What does this movie have in common with our old pal, Roger Corman?
Bunch of the actors?
No, it was filmed in only 18 days.
Oh, okay.
Which, to be fair, is long for Roger Corman. Because remember, The Little Shop of Horrors... 2 days. There you go.
2 days. Yep.
The black leopard we see in this movie, whose name is Dynamite, dear gods.
I believe you mean Dynamite.
No, I don't. He would show up again in another film by the same director, The Leopard Man. Gee, I wonder what part he plays in that.
I think he was man with camera.
No, I think he plays leopard.
Oh. Oh.
And speaking of cameos, wait, where were we? That is indeed Alfred himself, Alan Napier, in a small role, uncredited. Go, Alfred. This movie is very much part of the Criterion Collection and is number 833. You may have guessed, not a lot of trivia this week. However, before we get to the plot, we have a few small tidbits about Criterion. What should not be a surprise, the first movie that was released by Criterion on Laserdisc with all those juicy extras we now take for granted was, Max, take a wild guess. I'm sure you're going to be right.
The first one of the extras?
First one they put out on Laserdisc. It's not the number one in the Criterion. What is a major film considered a great film that you would put
Citizen
out?
Citizen Kane?
That is, in fact, the film. I knew you'd
know
it.
Okay. Oh, good for
and
me.
And that came out in 1984 on Laserdisc.
Wow.
But that is different from the spine number that now exists on the official collection. For the number one spot, you'd have to look for Grand Illusion. I think it's a French film.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Citizen Kane is number 1104. There are currently 1,337 films in the collection. The Right Stuff has the current high number. Sometimes films go out of print from the collection as licenses run out or are rescinded, and this can cause some discs to enter the collector's market with inflated prices. The one that commands the highest price in general is the massive AK-100 25 films by Akira Kurosawa set, which regularly goes for upwards of $1,000.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Other films that are out of print and damned expensive are Salo, a film I don't know, but it goes for $200 to $400. Hard Boiled and The Killer, both by John Woo, which can cost between $150 and $250. And one of my favorites, The Third Man, which on Blu-ray can cost up to $160.
Boy, okay. Yeah.
There might be a bit more to this Criterion thing next episode, but for now, let's get to the plot.
Yeah.
One day, while visiting Central Park Zoo, sort of, Oliver Reed... Spots a young woman, Yurina Dubrovna, innocently sketching leopards. In an odd little meet-cute, she invites him up to her place for a little nap? Seems Oliver has somehow just got all warm and cozy and fallen asleep. But, gee, could he see her again sometime? Well, per sure. Doesn't take much to get Oliver smitten, and soon they're going out. And even sooner, they're married. Gee, that was fast. But the wedding isn't all pickles and cream.
Pickles?
While dining at a Serbian restaurant, see, Irina is Serbian. Another Serbian woman with very cat-like demeanor greets Irina as a sister. You have a sister. Irina gets all upset, and later, at her lavish apartment, she confesses to her new husband that, see, where she comes from, there's this legend about evil Satan-worshipping witches that were driven out of their country by hero King John, and those that survived fled to the mountains, became, help, cat people, and she's one of them. So, no smooching or nookie for her, because if she does, well, things could get ugly. And hairballs. Oliver doesn't believe all this. Hokeman suggests she goes to a psychiatrist. He tells her that this is all childhood trauma from too many bedtime stories. Irina stops going to the doc. Things get more tense between she and Oliver starts to realize that his co-worker, Alice, is in love with him. And, since he can't get any from his wife, he might be in love with her, too. He confronts Irina, and things don't go well. Alice is stalked at night by a shadowy form, both on her way to the bus and at a pool in her apartment building. Clothes are shredded. Finally, everyone believes the tales, especially when the psychiatrist, who has also fallen under Urena's spell, is found mauled to death. But does Urena really turn into a leopard? Is there magic left in old world tales? And will someone please get me some fancy feast? The end.
The film.
So, Max, have you seen Cat People before?
We're all cat people. No, I haven't seen either of the versions. I think there might even be others, but no, I've never seen it.
Have you heard of it?
I didn't even know there was one from 1942.
Oh, you only knew the 80s one?
I knew about was the one from the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Batman with Nastasia, she made that interesting appearance on David Letterman. And I'm trying to think, who came in after her?
It was John Candy.
John Candy came in.
Because her hair was all weird, and she had he came out with his hair done the same way. Absolutely deadpan. It's going, I am so embarrassed, you know? We both had our hair done the same way. I was really not sure about this style. Oh.
It was brilliant. It was honestly brilliant, because she was just being really, really weird. And I mean, to be spacey. Fair, look who her dad is.
she's lucky she takes after her mom. Having
the birthday party here. Bring out some ice. Okay, whatever you say, Klaus, because, No, but that thing that John, I remember watching that. I think it's the only time I saw it when it was broadcast. It was really, really brilliant. So, because he must have scrambled like in the back behind the scenes, like, can I get my, do my hair like her? Do my hair like her? So, but it has nothing to do with this.
Yep. Nothing at all. But
1942.
And what about you? You hadn't either?
No, I remember that it popped up, and I can't remember again which movie about Hollywood we were watching where cat people pops up in the background. It might have been Mank. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But they talk about it being better than it was supposed to be. Like, this cat people movie is actually pretty good. So I'd heard of it, but didn't know really much of anything about it. So, and speaking of not knowing anything, I don't recognize anybody in this film except for Alan Napier, and he wasn't even credited.
I did. I recognized one person. I didn't know why until I looked him up, and that's Tom Conway, who plays Dr. Lewis Judd.
Yeah, we'll do him
first. He, by the way, was in 12 to the Moon.
Oh, dear God, was he?
Yes, yes. He was, I think, the Russian...
I think he's 8.
Doctor.
Maybe 9, yeah. I can't remember.
He might have been 8 or 9, but he was in there with Blast Hard Cheese.
Now, 12 to the Moon, doesn't that have Dick Van Patten in it? I think it does.
The Van Patten
project? 8 is enough, 12 to the Moon. Oh, see, there's a number in it, that's why they're connected.
I get it. Okay. I don't like it. Yeah,
at least it doesn't have Willie Ames in it.
So Tom Conway as Winona Judd. I looked it up, by the way, because they start with a quote from something called The Anatomy of Atavism.
Yeah. Who wrote that, by the way?
Dr. Lewis Judd.
So they're quoting one of their own characters.
They're quoting a fictional character, yes. Yeah. An atavism, by the way, is the reappearance of a characteristic in an organism after several generations of absence.
Ah.
I just happened to know that.
Yeah, it makes you talk funny, too.
Not like I looked it up or anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you knew him from that? Anything else?
That's all I know, yeah.
He plays a... you can't hear the air quotes, but assume they're there. He plays a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Or voodoo doctor, because... I don't know what he's doing. Yeah. He's like aiming this little laser beam lamp at her, and he's like, send her back there, with his hypnotism.
Hypnotized. Yeah. Yeah. And he is a remarkably sleazy little doctor, too. He's very condescending. He's very dismissive. He's kind of horrible. I was surprised. That was one of the things about this movie that surprised me. This is 1942. Nobody talked about psychiatry in movies.
Not much.
Or it was always about when people were actually like, oh, no, they're gibbering insane and in a straitjacket.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this is a woman who suffers from neurosis and needs some help.
Yeah, and the thing is that the stigma of going to a psychiatrist that back then was still pretty big, so I can understand that. The problem is, as depicted in this film, it's, shall we say, factually inaccurate.
Yeah, yeah.
And for one thing, they get really deep on the first visit. Mm-hmm. Like, there's none of this, hey, who are you? Where do you come from? Let me learn a little bit more about you. It's literally like,
does this look like a cow to you?
You are from the Eastern Europe places that we don't have names for, and it says here you have stories about cat people who told you that's the problem. I have now solved it. Just come back, and I'll just tell you that I've solved it many times until you've given me a lot of money and you're cured.
Yep, pretty much. This is like also one of the earliest films that mentions Serbia, in my experience.
Yeah, same here.
I'm surprised by that. By the way, the King John she talks about, he was real.
Yeah.
There were actually two of them, technically. John and, like, Jovan.
Yeah, but I'm betting there weren't real cat people.
No, that seems to have been left out.
Yeah, which is fine. As a psychiatrist, Tom Conway does a great astronaut from 12 to the Moon.
Yeah. He's not a bad actor. He's just, it doesn't seem very appropriate to a psychiatrist.
No. So,
how about Simone, or Simone Simon, who plays
actress so nice they named her twice.
Yeah. Irina Dubrovna.
They picked her specifically because she had a face that looked like a little kitten, and she does.
Yeah, she really does. She's actually a really good choice for that part, as is the other woman, unnamed cat woman.
Well, before we move off her, I actually really liked Simone Simon because there is something decidedly off about her.
Yeah, there's something otherworldly about her. Just the way she speaks, the way she holds herself, her facial expressions. There is something, you just go, wow, she's really pretty, but there's something, that girl ain't right.
Yeah, and you can see why somebody might be interested in her. I mean, yes, she's very lovely, but she does have a cat-like way about her, but it's not overdone like Catwoman or something. So I actually thought she did a really interesting job. I don't think that the part is as well written as it could have been. We'll get back to that later, but I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I do too.
Then we have Kent Smith as Oliver Reed. No, not that one.
I hate when that happens. You know, when a character in a movie has an act. It was the worst to me for that was it's Day of the Locust, and Donald Sutherland plays a character named Homer Simpson.
I don't know if that one's worse, or we have Raymond Burr playing Steve Martin.
Oh, that was bad too. Yeah.
A wild and crazy guy. Okay. Kent Smith is male.
He's definitely a guy.
He's I'm gonna go with adequate.
Yeah. He fills the slot well. That's about it.
I mean, he's reasonably good looking.
You could have gotten any decent looking white guy for this part and it would have been him.
I hate to say this, but you know what it feels like?
What?
Yeah, we drafted all the good actors, so this is what's left.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's not that he's bad. It's he's not very interesting.
He's workmanlike. You know?
He He gets the job done. We have Jane Randolph as Alice Moore. I actually liked Alice. I like the fact that she's working. It seems to be, you know, same level. And I guess they're shipbuilding. So she's a naval architect. So she's working hand in hand with Oliver Reed, not as a subordinate, but like they seem to be working together on stuff. I really like that. Of course, this would have been true during World War II. But I also like the fact that she basically comes out and says, yeah, we got a problem because I'm in love with you. I let you get married to your Urena there. But we got a problem. But I won't do anything about it. But I kind of want to. And then later on, it's like, yeah, you know what? I realize that she's weird and I love you too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like Jean Reno. Well, it's also,
she's weird. She won't let me touch her ever. Yeah,
ever. I'm going to sleep now. Yeah. Lock. Goodbye. So, and then, quite honestly, it's like some
The rest.
Dynamite the Panther, though, very Dynamite. Very Panther-like. Very Panther-like.
Very much. I believed he was a Panther. I also kind of liked Minnie, who is the only black person in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's also, and yes, she's a waitress.
And she looks like Aunt Jemima, the way she's dressed.
She is dressed that way. But she isn't deferential. She's not like, oh, lousy. She doesn't talk the way black characters in that era tended to talk.
We also get the idea it's her restaurant.
Yeah.
And she says something that I'm like, she walks by and goes, what, doesn't anybody like chicken gumbo? I'm like, I'd like some chicken gumbo, and I'll have some of yours.
I'll have theirs.
Yeah, and of course, what does our hero get every time he goes there?
Apple pie and coffee.
Apple-laska. Okay. That's a deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's, you know, there's a bunch of other people that I couldn't tell you. There's somebody called the Commodore. It's like, oh, cool, there's somebody named the Commodore. That was his name? Didn't know it.
There's the singing zookeeper.
Sure, yeah, who's got nothing better to do, apparently, because that's what he's singing about.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, cast runs from interesting with Simone Simon to workmanlike.
Yeah.
So.
Serviceable.
So, unfortunately, the day I chose to watch this film happened to be the first day that the Criterion Channel took it off their channel. So, I had to rent it. It wasn't the Criterion version. Was that the same for you as well, Max?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, I got it. Yeah, I had to rent it, but I don't have the Criterion Channel, so I knew I was going to have to anyway.
Yeah, just found that kind of annoying. I don't know if there's anything that was missing that was put back in or whatever, but... So the pacing of this film is interesting, because when we first start this film, my first note is, gee, love hits fast and hard at the zoo.
Yeah, I got to say, of course, my first note is, what's a radio picture?
It's a picture of a radio.
A picture of a radio. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, the... Hi, I love you.
I mean, it's like, why did I fall in love with you? Gosh, the way she threw that balled up piece of paper and missed the trash can, phew, that's the girl for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's in love with her, I think, by the end of the first date.
Well, that's the one he's napping.
Yeah, he has a little, shall we say, cat nap. I kept expecting. I also have, I'm surprised we don't find her curled up on his face.
Or chest, making it hard to breathe, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. I will say that in general, my notes for the pacing and stuff is that the scenes tend to be very short and very efficient. They don't go on very, it almost feels like they only have so much film in the camera. It's like, we got to get this going. Of course, 18 days is nothing for shooting a film. Yeah. But they don't mess around much. And they do, and part of the problem is, of course, we don't really see that the relationship develop much. It is really you let me take you, you let me come home with you to your apartment, which in 1944. Yeah.
That's 42. But yeah, that's
it usually meant something else.
Yeah.
And then he wants to, can I see you again? And there's a little bit of, you know, cat's play. And she says yes, and he gets to come back. And the next date, he asks her to marry him. So, I guess he says do you love me, Arena? And I said, what, on the second date?
Yeah, that's, you met like 5 minutes ago. Also, there are some kind of red flags. First, whenever he walks into the apartment, all the lights are off.
And she says, oh, I never noticed.
Yes.
Just like a cat wouldn't.
When he talks about, you know, he wants to embrace her, he wants to kiss her, her response, I've lived in dread of this moment. It's like, that's what every guy wants to hear.
What is that thing you have? I've never seen this before. Okay.
What is this thing called, love?
And my first note about her is, Miss Dubrovna is decidedly weird. There is something, but the idea, I guess, is that this is part of her quote-unquote magical power, is that she
I think some of it is supposed to be her scent. Because everyone mentions her perfume, and I don't know if she actually wears any. But admittedly, all I could think of, and I'm so sorry, but I kept thinking from Anchorman when Paul Rudd's character, who collects colognes, his most powerful is, of course, Sex Panther.
Yeah.
It has bits of real panther in it. 60% of the time, it works every time.
It's one of the only parts I thought was funny in that film. I'm sorry, I'm not a big Anchorman fan, but whatever.
Yep.
You know, and she has that sensual allure like cats do, because when I smell a cat, the first thing I think is, I'm in love with it, huh?
Hey, why else do we allow these horrible predators in our homes?
It ain't the smell.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's not that we know of.
Usually, I forget what the commercial was for, and I think it was actually a parody commercial, but they're talking about how you can get I think it's from either Kentucky Fried Movie or Amazon Moon in the Mool, where somebody walks in and goes, how many cats do you have? Did somebody die in here?
That's right. Did a buzzard puke in here?
Yeah. So I never thought of cats and scent being a thing. I don't know if they do pheromones. Maybe they do pheromones. I don't know. I know there is a thing called the Fleming face, which is true in big cats and the females, where they open their mouth and they look like they've got something that tastes bad. It's actually, they have a higher sense of smell on the roof of their mouth or back of the throat.
Oh.
And so they're letting more scent in to try and pick up whatever. And I don't know. Why are we getting into this?
I don't know. I got to say, I also, his relationship to her is so odd. What's the first thing he does? He buys her a cat.
I know.
Well, first of all, you don't do that. You don't give someone. I know, but it's so dumb. That's a hell of a commitment to do to somebody. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when I saw him with the kitten, and then they're like, she's like, no, I don't like kittens. And he's like, we'll take it back. I was worrying about that kitten for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I was afraid someone was going to eat the poor kitty.
That too.
And apparently it just ends up living in the office where they're designing ships and they name it John Paul Jones.
Oh, it's not the same cat. Because he trades it in for a canary. And I'm thinking, that canary ain't going to... Oh, it did last.
Not very long. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Well, course, it lasted longer than I thought. I thought he was there. She was going to bring it home. And the next time he shows up, I don't know what happened to the canary. Burp. Oh, sorry.
why are there feathers in your teeth?
I thought I saw a putty tat.
So, but it's weird. She takes it and feeds it to the leopard.
Yeah, well, it's dead. But,
yeah, and it dies apparently of terror of her.
Which, you know, you can get a bird. Yeah. If it gets cornered and stuff, that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Birds can be very, very touchy. But also, I got to say,
red flag!
Irina has got quite an arm on her, because she takes the dead bird and she's like, I hope no one's looking. And the space under the bars that she's got is really not very high, and she's not that close to it. And she sort of whips it, and it goes right in, right up to the panther. And you can also tell that it's not actually a dead bird. I don't know what it is that she throws in there. But the panther's sort of like, what the hell's that? I also felt bad for the damn cats, because it's obvious that this is like, this is back in the old days of zoos where it's like, and your habitat is a concrete bunker with bars in it. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no wonder they look so annoyed.
Well, they're pacing back and forth. That's what they do, because they're unhappy in their location. Yeah. But when you introduce a kitten into a film, if you don't show us what happens to that kitten, I'm going to worry about it for the rest of the film. So don't do that.
By the way, as a point for what kind of a psychiatrist Dr. Judd is, how do you like that line when she's saying, you know, what do I tell my husband? What does one tell a husband? Tell him nothing. That's terrific. Thank you. That's
back
great.
In the days of where the wife is the battle axe, and there's all the, you know what I mean? It's all
just hit him with a frying pan.
Like frying pans. I guess it's all that sort of thing. But I did forget to mention one actor that I did want to bring up, and I don't know what their name was, but she was the owner of the pet store.
Oh yeah.
She was terrible.
Yeah, she was actually very bad.
Yes. Yeah. So she throws the curve for our actors. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of liked in Alice's restaurant. No, I mean Alice's apartment house, which, by the way, not only is another huge building, it has an indoor pool.
Well, that's not hers. That's Alice's house. Yeah, Alice's does. That's right. Well, that's, you can tell, that's back when you had a doorman or a door person, and like they would collect your mail, there were services.
I like the desk clerk who is listed as Blondie.
Yeah. Well, she's the no-nonsense kind of woman from the 40s. Yep. It's like, what do you want, toots?
How you doing, dearie?
Yeah, no, she was fun. But also, that's back in the heyday of the Manhattan apartment. That is back when you had an apartment, and it wasn't like, oh, here's a living room, maybe a bedroom and a bathroom. It's like, no, it's a suite of rooms, and there's a hall. Yeah. Like, have you ever seen The Odd Couple? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that. It's this amazing place. Or Only Murders in the Building, of course, which now those cost, whatever, $3 million a piece.
Oh, at least. I'd think in 5 to 8.
Yeah, but it's like that was back when you could get that, and you were just some person. Now, I don't believe, I don't know where Urena's money comes from, because it sure doesn't come from sketching. We never see her go to work.
No, we don't really know. She works in fashion. That's what we know.
Fashion. Fashion. Yeah. So, we don't really know that much. She's from Serbia. She came here. That's about all we know. It is very interesting that they chose Serbia because it was a real country. Because sometimes it's from Kreplakistan and But they,
Uvrovitz Blitz.
What would we have known about Serbia in 1942? I would say just nothing. Basically nothing.
Nothing.
So, yeah. Time passes in this movie rather quickly.
We've been married over a month.
Yeah, and that's the only reason we know. Although. At one point, we do get one of Hollywood's old favorites, the asbestos snowflakes, because you knew that's what they were, right?
Well, I have to say, there are a couple of scenes that surprised me, especially for 1942, when Irina strips down and takes a bath.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, whoa, this is practically porn.
For the time, I guess
You see her back at one point. See her bare shoulders?
There's a number of... Of course, you would think being a cat person, she wouldn't like baths, but, you know...
Or she would be in there like, that's why she locks the doors like she's licking herself clean. I don't know.
To be fair, leopards do swim.
Yeah. I was like, okay, because Alice, when she is down swimming at night alone in this pool, hears something growling, and her response is to jump into the pool.
Yeah.
Which is not the worst thing to do, except, panthers can swim.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the filmmakers didn't know that.
Well, she didn't know what kind of cat, because lions, as far as they tend to avoid water, leopards will go in it, but they're not fond of it. Jaguars love it, and tigers love it.
Yeah.
They'll just sit there. I've seen lots of times the tigers are just, like, sitting in ponds or whatever with their head up, because it's like, it's hot. It's too hot. I'm good in here.
But gosh, it's hot.
Jaguars, dear gods. I've seen this film once where this jaguar is on a riverbank and there's an alligator in the river. And the jaguar goes in, grabs the alligator, drags it out, and takes it off screen and kills it. And I'm like, they can do that? I'm never going to South America again. So
probably the alligator is sitting there going, hey, wait, this is not the script.
Hey, I'm on the top of the food chain. What are you doing? I thought we had a thing. Don't you understand?
Look at all these teeth.
Meanwhile, the jaguar with its teeth clenched shut is going, tastes like chicken. So, there are some interesting things in this film, some little touches, because this film is not at all about the jump out monster scare. It's not about although apparently when Alice is being stalked and they keep cutting back and forth to some shadow behind her, which we never see. And then suddenly the bus pulls up and we hear the air brakes. Apparently in the theaters that caused everybody to jump out of their seats because they weren't expecting that sound. Huh. But this film isn't about the usual monster thing. We're not going to see a monster per se, which I did not
know. I was really glad that they didn't try to show the transformation or try to show her as a werepanther or something.
Well, I don't know. I was kind of let down because I hate to say it, but that panther's not exactly huge. So when it does finally show up, and apparently the director fought against this, he didn't want the panther to be in the office near the end of the film. When the panther does show up, it's like the camera's looking down at it. And I'm like, aw, isn't it cute? I want to pet it. I wish it had been somehow a little more otherworldly, because other than that, mostly what we get are shadows. Very brief. And there's a really good use of shadows. I love the scene in the pool. Because if you've ever been in a indoor pool, especially one that's underground, and there's only lighting coming from the pool, that lighting is weird.
It's very eerie.
And it's not complimentary at all. And it was a very tense little moment because I thought it was actually going to get Alice. I didn't know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. And they handle a couple of things really interestingly. I like when she's, you know, Irina is stalking Alice, mm-hmm. and you hear the sounds of their heels, mm-hmm. and they, you know, show the close-up of their heels, and suddenly Quentin Tarantino, as a little boy, gets excited and doesn't know why.
Oh, boy, but, feet!
But you hear two sets of heels, and suddenly there's only one.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, that's the first indication. That's the other thing about this film. For a lot of it, it's more psychological. It's like, is Irina delusional?
Mm-hmm.
Even then, we don't really know. Maybe she just stopped.
Yeah. Well, but, and then we see footprints, and we see muddy heel footprints, and then they suddenly become muddy cat footprints. But yeah,
that's much later. That's toward the end where we see the paw prints turn into shoe prints.
Well,
again, also very effective.
The other thing we see, which I thought was very cool, is Irina, not in the beginning of the film, but later in the film, has this long black coat, which really looks like a pelt. It's a very short, nap, sort of fur kind of coat. And it looks very luxurious, but it also looks a lot, and I'm sure it meant to look like a lot, like a leopard pelt, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yep. And she almost always has some kind of cat icon with her, a brooch, a necklace.
A hat, a pterodactyl.
Something like that, yeah. No, there's always cat stuff, which the doctor tells her to get rid of.
Right.
It's well, like, you're obsessed with...
Probably would, right? It's like, hey, there's an obsession going on here. Maybe you should remove the physical reminders around you of this thing that's obviously caused you pain. So,
and maybe stop eating from a bowl on the floor.
You know, and I didn't even think about this till now, but the film kind of built in a really good reason for a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
We know there's another cat person in New York, and we don't know what happens to them. And they seem, if anything, more comfortable in that position than Irina does. I say Irina because that's how they pronounce it. It's spelled Irina, but whatever.
But, you know, I think it's pronounced Irina.
Yeah. So that, I didn't watch the second film, and I haven't seen the 80s one, but they could easily have made a little franchise about that. So I got to say, though, I really wish there had been some sort of... well done, which for 42 wasn't going to happen. So for a well done half cat person, like halfway through transformation, something. Because later on when we see the dead body, because it turns out Irina, when she dies, turns back into the, well, she turns into a panther skin, a stuffed panther.
I don't know if that was lump. The code or what. Yeah, it's hard to tell. Yeah,
so it was kind of hard to tell. There's also, I would say, a little bit overuse of the whole cat metaphor. At some point, somebody says, oh, it feels like a cat just walked over my... Nobody says that. Nobody says a cat walked over my grave.
They do. Sometimes it's a goose, but other people say cat.
I'm sorry, a goose?
Yeah, goose walked over
my grave. A cat just walked over my goose. I thought...
No! dope.
People say a goose just walked over my grave.
Yeah, I don't quite know why, but
is that supposed to be frightening? It just seems
supposed to be
weird.
Creepy? I don't know.
I have never ever heard... I've heard somebody just walked over I've never heard cat, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Also...
Also, 1942, how many people carry sword canes?
You know, I bet there's people today who still do that, even though it's horribly illegal.
They must. I see them advertised. Oh, no, it's a concealed weapon. Yeah.
The problem, of course, is it's not made of silver. Because that...
Yes.
Wait, would that make a difference? I don't know. They made this up.
I don't know.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, though, with some of the cat imagery, there's a little dream sequence when she's under with the psychiatrist. And the animation for the cat stuff's really
surprisingly
neat.
Good. I was surprised.
I wish there'd been a little bit more of that. Like, if we'd seen it again, only maybe it could have evolved during the film. Like, you know, she starts falling into it more and more. Because initially, I can't tell if Irina has never changed into a cat and is worried what happened if she might, or it has happened and she's trying to avoid it. I can't tell.
Yeah,
it's but hard. Yeah, they could have done something with that. I don't know. It's kind of neat. I would say, too, that the pacing, while I said early that the scenes tend to be short and very efficient, it tends to slow down towards the end, just when they're supposed to be exciting.
They're trying, I think, to build tension.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Also, I was surprised. Did you know that an architectural T-square works as a crucifix?
Well, it's got that part sticking up, so...
Not very much. It looks more like a lowercase T.
I mean, I have one right here, and it doesn't really... do that. But yeah, hey, and also cat people. Well, I guess we could understand that because they say that John came in and got rid of the Satanists. They were specifically Satanists. So,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't really mind that part. So there was a weird, I don't know if it's a mix up or what, but later at the end of the film, we have both Oliver and Alice and Dr. Judd waiting for Irina to come back so they can confront her about this whole cat people thing and basically say, well, we don't care what you say. We're getting married. And they finally give up and say, well, let's go off and we'll go look somewhere else. And Dr. Judd decides, I'm going to go wait for her. We don't know exactly why. Oh, we find out later. And so he goes, oh, I left my cane. Let me just go and get my cane. And he goes back. And then they just were like, okay, we're going wandering off. And what he does is he leaves the door unlocked so he can come back to the apartment later.
Right.
But when they are looking for Dr. Judd, they're worried about Dr. Judd. They call Urena's apartment expecting him to be there. And I'm like,
yeah,
why do you expect him to be there? He left with you, but okay. So,
by the way, after my notes, when Dr. Judd is killed, I couldn't help thinking, poor Dr. Judd is dead. Poor Dr. Judd is dead.
Yeah. Is it Carousel? Yeah. No.
No, it's Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma.
If you keep banging your pots, you won't have any pots left.
Yeah. Well, you know, Max, it's almost that time or close enough. Cat people, we should decide, does cat people hold up? Is it worth watching or not?
The finish.
So, Max.
Huh?
Cat people. Ooh. Cat people.
Cat people, cat people.
Oh, and just so our audience knows, there is no singing, except for the zookeeper, which doesn't count.
Yeah.
And there's also really no AI buttholes. So.
No, there is definitely not.
No. So, Max, what did you think of Cat People?
Honestly, it was better than I thought it was going to be. I thought, you know, 1940s monster movie, I thought it was just going to be like another version of the Wolfman or one of the inferior ripoffs. And it kind of is, but it's much more psychological. The performances are decent. I got to say, the story is very choppy. You talk about how short the scenes are. Things jump from one thing to another really fast.
Yeah.
And in a kind of disorienting way. The movie is very short. It's an hour and 12 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little bit more about the lore, not just the psychology. But for what it was, and also, I got to say, the cinematography is surprisingly good.
Especially the shadow stuff, yeah.
The stuff with light and shadow that they play with is amazing. They're pretty good at establishing some tension, although, as you point out, eventually you're just going, oh, just attack someone already.
Just eat him, eat him, eat him.
I like that up until Alice's robe gets torn, there's no physical evidence at all that Irina's anything but nuts. I didn't realize when they're talking about getting their marriage annulled or having her committed, but you can't divorce a crazy person. Like, really? Okay, that was the law? Which I guess kind of makes sense, because if you, a person who is deemed unfit can't enter into contracts, and in effect a divorce is a contract. So, I thought that was interesting. I think it's better than I thought. I think for what it wasn't bad. I can't say it's a great movie, but I can also see how it influenced a lot of other stuff. What about you? What'd you think?
Well, and I didn't know what to expect either. Cat people. Okay, whatever. Like you, I thought, oh, it's a 40s monster movie. How far can this go? I think the problem I have with it is that it didn't go through enough edits. It needed more versions. Because there's some really interesting stuff, and I really appreciate that they are trying to do something moody, atmospheric, psychological. They could have stretched out the idea that it was not actually this magical thing that was happening longer. I like the idea that we see one other cat person. How many others are there in New York? Right? Like, will this show up in Bell, Book, and Candle? I don't know, but it could. You know, I mean, there's a lot of potential in this film for further stories. Something that could have built in, and they didn't do this in the 40s. Like, there was no such thing as franchises except for, like, maybe Sherlock Holmes and the Universal Monsters. But even then, I don't think they were thinking...
Well, they were the serials, but
yeah, but they weren't thinking of them as franchise the way they do now.
No. No.
And I can totally see why people would have gone to see this in the 40s, because there wasn't anything quite like it. And it could have led to, and probably did lead to, other monster films later on down the road. And I didn't see the remake. Maybe I'm kind of interested in seeing it now.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, you've got Nastassja Kinski, who, say what you will, can be very interesting if, because she's weird, with Malcolm McDowell, who's, that's kind of his thing.
Who's always a lot of fun to watch, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested in that now. But to me, this feels like the kind of fiction that should have spawned a lot of fan fiction. Like, there's a lot of people going, ooh, what if you did this? What if you did this? There's a lot of potential here. I think that the final execution is not great. I think I can see why it's in the Criterion Collection, because of the time, it is kind of a standout movie because of what it's trying to do. It had a very small budget, and, you know, things got cut. They had to use old sets, although, to be fair, if you have to reuse old sets, The Magnificent Ambersons is not exactly, like, you know, crap.
You could do worse.
Yeah. I think that it is a film that would probably not interest a lot of people today, but if you like old films, and if you're looking for something that you probably haven't seen and that's atmospheric and interesting, yeah, sure, it's only, Max said it's like an hour 12, so who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't take much time. So, I would probably go for it. But you know what else I would go for?
Tell us.
Our poll question.
And what is that poll question, Mike?
Well, that poll question is, which horror movie monster just kept with you, peeking out from the shadows of your deepest, darkest thoughts? Let us know, and we'll bring back Bumpy Puck cereal. No, we won't. We might bring back Bumpy Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
But how can you tell us your answer? Well, I'm glad you asked. You could be like Doris Hempelmeyer and give our little toll-free number a call, and that number is 617-398-7266.
What number?
617-398-7266. Or,
thank you. Like
Bill O'Lady, you could email us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. We love to get your email. And hey, we have a 400th episode coming up real soon. If you want to give us any anniversary wishes, by all means, we'd love to hear them.
Please do.
Or you can also give them to us on our website, maxmikemovies.com. All our episodes are there. Hey, if you're new to the show and you're wondering, hey, did they cover that movie? A question we ask ourselves all the time.
Yes.
There's a search function there, so you can type in the name of your favorite movie and see if we have, in fact, covered it. MaxMikeMovies.com. Leave a comment. Talk to the other people who leave comments, like Vince, or, again, Cheese Boy. It's been a while. So, yeah, MaxMikeMovies.com. If you like podcast apps, we're on podcast apps everywhere. If you like social media, we are on Facebook and Blueski. But also, we are on the middle of this series of, because it's good for you. Close enough. Shut up. So, Max, what is the next choice in line for Because It's Good for You, the Criterion Collection?
Well, we're going to move from fantasy movies of the 40s to science fiction movies of the 50s.
Oh.
This is a movie I have never seen. I've seen a couple of clips from it, as I know you have. And this is one of those, this is in the Criterion Collection movies.
Ruh-roh.
So I want to see why, and we're going to watch Fiend Without a Face.
Fiend Without a Face. Uh-oh.
So make sure you spray for brains.
I just sprayed for brains last week.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.